Hi, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not enjoying our haunting episodes of The Grave Talks, I invite you to check out our true crime and disaster podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia. The man who broke barriers in the world of aviation, Charles Lindbergh. Also the man who would have his life torn apart and plagued by disaster as his child was kidnapped from his home in 1932. Who stole the Lindbergh baby and why? Who could do such an act of deplorable crimes against humanity? Today, the Lindbergh baby on the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
On March 1, 1932, Charles Augustus Lindbergh Jr., 20-month-old son of aviators Charles Lindbergh and Anne Morrow Lindbergh, was abducted from the crib on the upper floor of the Lindbergh's home in Highfields in East Amwell, New Jersey. On May 12th, the child's corpse was discovered by a truck driver by the side of a nearby road. In September 1934, a German immigrant carpenter named Bruno Richard Hauptmann was arrested for the crime. After a trial that lasted from January 2nd to February 13th, 1935, he was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to death. Despite his conviction, he continued to profess his innocence, but all appeals failed and he was executed in the electric chair at the New Jersey State Prison on April 3rd, 1936. Newspaper writer H.L. Menkekin called the kidnapping and trial the biggest story since the resurrection. Legal scholars have referred to the trial as one of the trials of the century. The crime spurred Congress to pass the Federal Kidnapping Act, commonly called the Little Lindbergh Law, which made transporting a kidnapping victim across state lines a federal crime. At 7:30 p.m. on March 1, 1932, the Lindbergh's nurse, Betty Gow, found that 20-month-old Charles Augustus Lindbergh Jr. was not with his mother, Anne Morrow Lindbergh, who had just come out of the bathtub. Gow then alerted Charles Lindbergh, who immediately went to the child's room, where he found a ransom note containing bad handwriting and grammar and an envelope on the windowsill. Taking a gun, Lindbergh went around the house and grounds with butler Ollie Watsley. They found impressions in the ground under the window of the baby's room, pieces of a cleverly designed wooden ladder, and a baby's blanket. Watsley telephoned the Hopewell Police Department, and Lindbergh contacted his attorney and friend, Henry Breckenridge, of the New Jersey State Police. Hopewell Borough Police and New Jersey State Police officers conducted an extensive search of the home and its surrounding area. After midnight, a fingerprint expert examined the ransom note and ladder. No usable fingerprints or footprints were found, leading experts to conclude that the kidnappers wore gloves and had some type of cloth on the soles of their shoes. No adult fingerprints were found in the baby's room, including the areas witness admitted to touching, such as a window, but the baby's fingerprints were found. The brief handwritten ransom note had many spelling and grammar irregularities. So it's the Dark Side of Wikipedia, the Lindbergh baby story. And this is one I have to admit, you know, I've heard about, but I don't know many of the details of. So I'm really excited to kind of dive into exactly what went down with this. It's Tony and Carol Hughes on the episode today. If you like our program, you want access to all the archives and all that, and bonus parts of the show, the final chapters, check it out at darksideofwiki.com and help keep us on the air. What's your thoughts, knowledge, and all that on Lindbergh's case?
Well, it's been so long since I've read anything about this or seen anything about it mm-hmm. that I don't remember anything about the person who was arrested or the trial. So it's going to be like all new to me, mm-hmm. that part. But, you know, I mean, kidnapping a 20-month-year-old baby, mm-hmm. that's just sick. That is so sick.
Yeah.
And at the time, he was, the Charles Lindbergh was very beloved.
Yeah.
You know, he was like a national hero. Well, maybe more than national. I mean, he was worldwide famous.
It'd be like kidnapping Tom Hanks' kid.
Right.
You know, in today's world of celebrity.
Although Tom Hanks went and did the, you know, inaugural thing.
Yeah.
So now there's probably half the country hates him.
Yeah.
But that's all it takes these days.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was so beloved. And the fact that someone could do something like that to him and just the outrage of the country. And I think that, you know, that was one of those things that the whole country was in shock.
Yeah.
Over. I was watching a show over the weekend. I'm not going to say the name of the show because I'm not giving anything away. But in the show that I was watching, there was a child kidnapped. And I was like, that's such a horrible thing to do.
And
like, I can't even wrap my brain around that.
And a very weird plot line for the Connors. It was like, I don't know why they were...
I was like, Roseanne's poor child got kidnapped.
And somehow she gave birth from beyond the grave, which was even weirder.
And it was a rerun because she was still on there. And I was like, how did I never see that episode before? Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was Roseanne. That's what I was watching. And, yeah, but I was thinking, I just thought about that over the weekend. Like, that is a certain kind of evil to do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that's trying to take away, you know, just take away a part of that person's soul.
Yeah.
Something they would never, ever recover from. Like, that's just so horrific.
It's evil. I mean, there's
and I just don't know, like, and that's why I'm going to be interested into this person who was arrested. Like, because did they really think he did it? You know, or was it one of those things where we got to arrest somebody?
Yeah, because the country's begging for the villain to be identified. And how many times does that happen? So
I don't remember that part. So that'll be interesting.
Let's jump back into it. We're going to pick up with the actual letter that the ransom note that was left at the Lindbergh home. And keep in mind, it is grammatically very messed up. So I'm not misreading. I'm going to do my best to read this misread letter as it was written. Dear sir, have 50.000 ready, $25,000 in $20 bills, and $15,000 in $10 bills, and $10,000 in $5 bills. After 2 to 4 days, we will inform you where to deliver the money. Many of these words spelled incorrectly as well. We warn you for making anything public, for notify the police the child is in gut care. Indication for all letters, our signature, and 3 holes. At the bottom of the note were 2 incorrected blue circles surrounding a red circle with a hole punched through the red circle and 2 more holes to the left and right. Word of the kidnapping spread quickly. Hundreds of people converged on the estate, destroying any footprint evidence, along with police, well-connected and well-intentioned people arriving at the Lindbergh estate. Military colonels offered their aid, although only one had law enforcement experience, Herbert Norman Schwarzkopf, superintendent of the New Jersey State Police. The other colonels were Henry Skillman Breckinridge, a Wall Street lawyer, and William J. Donovan, a hero of the First World War, who would later head the Office of Strategic Services. A forerunner of the CIA, Lindbergh and these men speculated that the kidnapping was perpetrated by organized crime figures. They thought that the letter was written by someone who spoke German as his native language. At this time, Charles Lindbergh used his influence to control the direction of the investigation. They contacted Mickey Rosner, a Broadway hanger-on rumored to know mobsters. Rosner turned to 2 speakeasy owners, Salvatore Salvi Spitale and Irving Bitz, for aid. Lindbergh quickly endorsed the duo and appointed them as intermediaries to deal with the mob. Several organized crime figures, notably Al Capone, Willie Moretti, Joe Adonis, and Abner Zwillman, spoke from prison, offering to help return the baby in exchange for money or for legal favors. Specifically, Capone offered assistance in return for being released from prison under the pretense that his assistance would be more effective. This was quickly denied by the authorities. The morning after the kidnapping, authorities notified President Herbert Hoover of the crime. At that time, kidnapping was classified as a state crime, and the case did not seem to have any grounds for federal involvement. Attorney General William D. Mitchell met with Hoover and announced that the whole machinery of the Department of Justice would be set in motion to cooperate with the New Jersey authorities. The FBI was authorized to investigate the case, while the United States Coast Guard, the U.S. Customs Service, the U.S. Immigration Services, and the Washington, D.C. Police were told their services might be required. New Jersey officials announced a $25,000 reward for the safe return of Little Lindy. The Lindbergh family offered an additional $50,000 reward of their own. At the time, this total reward of $75,000 would approximately be equivalent to $1,172,000 today. It was a tremendous sum of money because our nation was in the midst of the Great Depression. On March 6, a new ransom letter arrived by mail at the Lindbergh home. The letter was postmarked March 4th in Brooklyn. It carried the perforated red and blue marks. The ransom had been raised to $70,000. A third ransom note postmarked from Brooklyn and also included the secret marks arrived in Breckinridge's mail. The note told the Lindberghs that John Condon should be the intermediary between the Lindberghs and the kidnappers and requested notification in a newspaper that the third note had been received. Instructions specified the size of the box the money should come in and warned the family not to contact the police. During this time, John F. Condon, a well-known Bronx personality and retired schoolteacher, offered $1,000 if the kidnapper would turn the child over to a Catholic priest. Condon received a letter reportedly written by the kidnappers. It authorized Condon to be their intermediary with Lindbergh. Lindbergh accepted the letter as genuine. Following the kidnapper's latest instructions, Condon placed a classified ad in the New York American reading, "Money is ready, Jeff C." Condon then waited for further instructions from the culprits. The meeting between Jaffe and a representative of the group that claimed to be the kidnappers was eventually scheduled for late one evening at Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx. According to Condon, the man sounded foreign, but stayed in the shadows during the conversation, and Condon was thus unable to get a close look at his face. The man said his name was John. He was relating his story. He was a Scandinavian sailor, part of a gang of three men and two women. The baby was being held on a boat, unharmed, but would be returned only for ransom. When Condon expressed doubt that John actually had the baby, he promised some proof. The kidnapper would soon return the baby's sleeping suit. The stranger asked Condon, "Would I burn if a package were dead?" When questioned further, he assured Condon that the baby was alive. On March 16th, Condon received a toddler's sleeping suit by mail and a seventh ransom note. After Lindbergh identified the sleeping suit, Condon placed a new ad in the home news. "Money is ready, no cops, no secret service. I come alone like last time." On April 1st, Condon received a letter saying it was time for the ransom to be delivered. So, they really, you know, they're in the cemetery with the guy standing behind the tree and having all of this go down. I mean, I'm really kind of amazed that it went down like that. I don't know that would happen today. That's the preview. If you want to hear the full episode, be sure to subscribe to Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday.